Hello everyone, this is Bill Knauer and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. Well, I'm going to take care of just a little bit of house business here before we get to our guest. As I mentioned, we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. If you've ever thought of joining them, or if you've let your membership lapse this month, it's the time to join up, because if you do, well, you're essentially signing up free, because you have this month, like I said, this next 4 weeks, you will have, you can, if you'd like, receive a free 30-minute coaching session from me, which would normally cost more than the $65 that it costs to join the PNWA. And if you want to be coached, we can talk about anything from query letters to opening sentence to indie publishing to traditional publishing to just the various pressures and terrors that can afflict the writers. So that's to go to pnwa.org to learn more about that. Also, if you're in the Seattle area, stop by East West Books October 4th and the first Thursday of every month, where I host the Authors Roundtable. And you can come and talk about all things writing and publishing. All experience levels are welcome and everything's on the table. Finally, if you like the opinions and the ideas expressed here, do pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an author's companion, available online and wherever fine books are sold. So writing. Some writers write really just one thing. I remember seeing Larry McMurtry give a lecture, and he said he never could understand the short story, for instance. He could only write novels. And some writers can only write poems. Some writers can only write screenplays. But some writers, like today's guest, the multi-talented Joanne Hart, writes, well, really everything. She's the author of two novels, Addled, which came out in 2007, and most recently, Float, and is also the author of essays, articles, short fiction, and poetry, all of which have appeared in a variety of literary journals and national publications. She's also a regular contributor to the Boston Globe magazine, and her work has won all kinds of awards, including a Penn Faulkner New England Discovery Award in fiction. Wow, how about that? Let's get her on and meet this very interesting person. Joanne, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are
you? I'm fabulous. Thank you for making the long cross-country virtual journey. I know you're there in Gloucester, Massachusetts, yep, which is a seaside town, is it not?
It's a seaside city, the oldest fishing port in the country.
How about that? Now, you have a bit of an interest in the environment, do you not?
I do, and I grew up in the Bronx and then in the suburbs of New York City, and from a very young age, I've always been very interested in the environment. I sort of came of age during the first Earth Day in 1970. I was an impressionable, I don't know, 12 or 13 years old, so it's always like been with me. And, you know, the first wave of environmentalism was all about picking up trash. And we've come a long way from there.
Yes, we have. And so what, I mean, obviously about that same time, well, I don't know. It varies from person to person, but I've interviewed a lot of writers, and usually that's also when they begin to recognize that they're interested in the written word. Was that the case at that time, or did it take longer?
No, that wasn't the case with me. I know that most writers, they talk about always knowing that this is what they wanted to do, that they're writing from a very early age. I was always a big reader, but it wasn't until, I mean, I was in my, I think, my late 30s. I'm in my, we won't say exactly how old I am, but we are in the mid-50s now. But so I started, I think early 40s, I had three children who were still in elementary school or high school. They were young. And I realized I could not start making them go to college unless I finished my college degree. I was a dropout. It's what we did in the 70s. We dropped out.
Yes.
And I dropped out of Skidmore after 1 year and had gotten married very young, had children young. And then, but then as they were sort of creeping up, I was like, oh, no, they're going to throw it in my face and they won't go to school. So while they were young, and in fact, even when I was pregnant, I was finishing my undergraduate degree at Harvard Extension, which is about an hour's drive from Gloucester, Cambridge, is about an hour away. And over the years, I, you know, was just, you know, chopped away at a degree there. And Harvard, when you're in the extension program, when you're getting a degree in the extension program, they make you follow the same guidelines as any undergraduate. And so I had to take two writing courses.
Uh-huh.
And I was in social sciences, and I enjoyed writing papers, but I just was, like, kicking and screaming about taking writing courses. And so, but that's why colleges make you read the menu. It's why liberal arts is so wonderful. I mean, that you don't know really what your gift is until you're exposed to it in some way. And so it was in one of these two mandatory expository writing courses that the professor called me into her office and said, you know, you really should be writing fiction. And she just sort of set me in that direction and told me to start subscribing to Poet and Writers magazine. And, you know, that I did. And then that's just how it started. And then after I finally finished my undergraduate degree in social sciences with a specialty in gender studies, I went immediately to Bennington and got an MFA in writing and literature at Bennington. But somebody had to tell me that was writing.
That is extremely unusual. That might be a first in my extensive and unscientific survey of writers. Right. That is perhaps a first. All right, but something, but it doesn't, I guess in a way it really doesn't matter. That you get bit by that bug. And so, you know, you had to take the class. And you had a professor say, hey, you can do this, but something in you must have also said, yeah, and I think I'd like to do this. Can you remember that moment?
It was true that once she, because I'd never written a word of fiction. Because remember, I was in an expository writing, but apparently my style was fiction. I was throwing in dialogue and storylines and the whole thing. And so once I actually started, I was like, oh, not only can I do this, but I really love doing this. And it just opened a whole new world for me.
Yeah. Boy, I'll bet it did. And so were you intimidated by the prospect of being a fiction writer? Most people who go on to become fiction writers never know a fiction writer. Fiction writers are just mysterious people with names on dust jackets, you know, or dead. And so what about you? How was that for you?
Yeah, no, I knew I was such an innocent. I mean, I knew nothing. I mean, truly nothing. And although I'd been a big reader, it's true that the authors were simply just names and usually dead. And so it was, I had a little more flexibility in my undergraduate degree. I took a couple of writing courses there that sort of introduced me to what fiction was. And it took me a long time to understand the difference, actually, between writing about basically memoir and fiction. I mean, because the course where the professor called me in was an expository course on writing your life. And so, you know, so it took a long time to understand the difference and to learn about the basics of fiction, of story, you know, and creating an arc and the narrative and things like that. And then I sort of creeped back, and then I started doing nonfiction. When I was at Bennington, I took a third semester nonfiction switch with George Packer and found that I really enjoyed doing that. And so I do a little bit. And then somewhere along the way, an essay that I had started with George in Bennington, I submitted to the Boston Globe magazine and was actually their second ever feature essay, first person essay they'd ever published, and it was about Gloucester and the disappearance of the statues of Mary around town and how this was sort of a class indicator, and that Gloucester was changing and really maybe not for the better.
So right.
Then I got started, and that's when all of a sudden all these editors started calling me and asking me to do articles. And so then I began this whole totally different career in writing about homes and gardens.
And did you have a big interest in homes and gardens before you started writing about them?
I do. I really, because that's sort of what the essay was, that I pay particular attention to homes and their surroundings. And so, and I have a whole series of stories called the Real Estate Stories, where for a couple of years, two or three years, I just find great real estate ads and then develop a story around them.
That is fascinating.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is so fascinating. This is what makes writers so interesting to me. And that I always think about this great quote by Ray Bradbury, who said, "I'm not a science fiction writer. I'm not a fantasy writer. I'm a teacher. I'm teaching people how to do what they love," is how he described it. But I think every writer is a teacher because, for instance, I wouldn't think to write about homes. It wouldn't light up for me. But for you as a writer, it seems to me your job is to teach people why homes are so cool and so interesting and so full of potential, whereas I wouldn't see it. But you do.
That's right, because, in fact, it also becomes a tool. My job going into strangers' homes and writing about them, really helps in the fiction because, objects tell tremendous stories. And so you walk into somebody's home, and they might not even be aware of sort of the story that their home is telling. And sometimes, it's not a great story, and it's, these articles are certainly not exposés, and I don't then play on that narrative. But everything, is sort of why anybody has any object in a house, why the colors are the way they are, what animals they have, what type of home they have, period. Just says everything about them.
I agree, and that reminds me of something that I had become aware of as a boy in particular, which was that I was always a little nervous about going into people's houses for the first time because I had this sense that that's where the reality of their life really existed. And so I was very sensitive, I think, and so if there was pain or there was sort of like sadness withheld, I was going to smell it like a rotting odor as soon as I walked in that house. And I was always worried about what I was going to find because nothing's hidden there. That's where it is. That's where it just festers, something festering.
Exactly. And that's also what's amazing about the fronts of people's homes, how they differ from what's inside. Or, there'd be a public area of a home, the living room, and these days it's also the kitchen and the dining room or the public areas, and then these other floors are, creepy and tell an entirely different story than the one that they think they're letting you see. But, of course, everybody always shows their hand.
And isn't that why we have haunted houses, though? I mean, there's something particular about the house that just cries out for haunting.
That's right. But, houses even have, sort of faces, as we call it, the face of a house. I mean, the fenestration, the windows are like eyes, and the door is the mouth, and the roof is the eye. I mean, they're very, and they house us. And we're humans. We live in houses. We don't live underground. We don't live in caves, generally. Some people live on the water. But generally, we live in houses, and they're part of us and an expression of who we are.
And so now you are a professional writer, this is what you do. Where was the professional writer when you were 25 and 30? What was she doing? Just reading, do you think?
Where was she indeed? I often ask myself right now while I'm working on a book length a sort of crime memoir of, for a few years I was living a sort of a dangerous life after I dropped out of Skidmore and had become associated with a murder, a double murder, bow and arrow. And for the past 10 years, I keep dipping into the story and writing about it. It all happened in Stamford, Connecticut. And so there was certainly, for that period of time, I was certainly gathering information, which now I'm trying to, you know, to sort out and make sense of. And then I had to sort of settle down as far away as I could from that, raising kids, and certainly that is its own amazing journey. And I'm very glad, looking back, that I was not writing when my kids were very young, because I wouldn't have ever had time to do it, and it would have been a great frustration and anxiety. Instead, it just sort of had its own organic life, whereas the kids became more independent. I was granted freedom as well and was able to pursue the writing, which I could not have done ever with three kids under five.
Yeah, you know, it's a thing that every writer has to learn to do, and I've talked about it a lot on this program, especially lately, is that if you do have kids and you want to write, and there are people who want to do that while they have children, you have to learn how to close the door on them. You have to learn how to say, because you can't write unless you can disappear for at least 30 minutes and hopefully a couple hours.
I mean, really
disappear.
Still, in spite of that, my thinking that I wasn't writing till they were older, my oldest daughter, she says that one of her earliest memories is just sort of like leaning against mommy's office door, mommy, mommy, just sort of like trying to get in. But she turned out okay in the end. She's a doctor now. It didn't kill her to have mommy go
off
and do her own stuff.
I think in general that it's very useful to see. I mean, assuming the parents don't completely ignore their children, because nobody wants to be completely ignored. But there is something very inspiring in you about seeing your parents do what they love. I mean, I still think that's your best example, as long as you don't just, you know, block out everybody else all the time. But to see them do what they love, because what more do you want for your kids anyway?
Right, exactly. It does show them also, you know, about like working hard for what you want. Because, you know, it's hard to get published. It's hard to learn writing. It's hard to sort of figure out your writing life, and that takes a long time. And, you know, whereas the kids are standing around, you know, having grown up in sort of an instant gratification world, and they're like, well, where's the book? Where's the book? Where's the fame? You know, where, you know? You say you're a writer. Where is it? And now, you know, now they sort of, you know, can see, and that certainly my oldest daughter, the many, many years of medical school, and she's still, you know, she's still a resident. It goes on for a long time. It just takes time. And I've always told them, you know, when they're asking, well, where is it, you know, where's the result of this, is that you've got to do it because you love it, that you've got to love the process. And that you have to love the process in whatever you do in life, whatever you choose to do, because that is the life, is the process.
That's right.
And
Amen.
That once in a while, you might have a physical object, like a book or an article, whatever it is, and that brings you some joy, but it's a very fleeting thing. You know, it's like you're walking on air for a little while, and then it's like, Well, now what?
Now
you know,
what?
You've got. The process has to be like a part of you, and you have to love it because
it's
sitting there.
You know, what are you going to do? You know, whatever job you have to do, whether it's raising children or working at a bank or writing or whatever, you're going to spend a lot of time doing that. So do you like to actually do it, the actual experience, not the money, not the awards or the attention, but the actual doing of it? Because most of writing is sitting alone and thinking on paper.
Right, you know, and thinking you're crazy, too, you know, just sort of thinking here, going, what am I doing? What am I doing?
That's right.
And that you just really have got to, you know, realize what you're doing is your life.
That's right.
And be happy doing it, and you know, stop complaining.
You know what I've had to often remember, and I don't know if this works for you because you do some things on assignment. It sounds like, and I've been doing. I don't do things on assignment now. Although it's not that I'm opposed to it. I'm not doing it right now. But when I'm working, especially on a long project, for me, if I get caught up thinking about my career in regards to the project, I lose all interest in the project. But if I start thinking in terms of why am I doing this and how, what it would be like to share this with another human being, now it has interest to me. But it's very easy for me to get caught up thinking, well, I got to do this and that, and then I got to blah, 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 blah. And I suddenly think I just hate the whole process. I don't know if you go through that, but that's a constant
It is. It's a constant thing of, you know, especially since I do write different things, and I usually have a few things going at one time, and I might be spending a whole lot of time on this one little thing that is not an assignment. Maybe it doesn't have any, a short essay that really has no market value at all, but it's just something that an essay I want to write and I want to master, and I want to get it right. And so I'll be spending hour after hour on this thing when I know that there's other things that I could be doing that will, quote unquote, help my career. And but you know, and then I say, nope, got to do this, the thing that I love and I'm drawn to and have this really strong attraction to, and get it done. And then, you know, those things almost always work out for the best, because then it turns out that this thing that I'm so magnetically drawn to turns out to sort of have the magic. You know, that thing that I'm looking for deep inside of an essay or a short story finally comes to pass, and then it becomes this wonderful piece. But you don't know that when you're going into it. You don't know anything. You know, it's just this, you know, dark journey. It's fiction, especially. But essays, too. Essays, you know, even if you're drawing on real life, essays, too, and nonfiction require that you find that magic in it. And it takes time. It takes work. And it is rare if I, you know, sit down and just type something and there it is right in front of my face. Usually you have to go after it.
Yeah. You have to dig. I was talking to Beverly D'Onofrio, who's written, she's a memoirist almost exclusively. She does a lot of magazine writing, too. But she wrote Riding in Cars with Boys and just wrote one called Astonished. That's when I talked to her. And we were talking about memoir, because I write about my own life now, almost to the exclusion of all other subject matter. And we were talking about how we always start on the surface. Like, that's always what the first draft is, just sort of what happened. And then... And strangely, when we write about just what happened, it doesn't feel like what happened. And then we go down, and then we get into what actually happened, which is always, of course, well beneath the surface. But it usually takes a couple drafts to find that.
Or many drafts. I mean, certainly in the book-length crime memoir I've been picking up and putting down for so long, you know, it's often painful because, you know, I have to, like, find that girl that I was at 18 and 20, and say, what was wrong with you? You know, what were you doing that for? What, you know, that really you couldn't see that everybody was like killing each other around you, but no, she hadn't, and it sort of, you sort of have to then make you got to make a lot of sense out of something like that. If somebody's really not seeing danger around them, then you've got to wonder why.
So much of what writing is, I found in terms of writing memoir, because I've been working on one now for a while about my relationship with my son, is allowing myself to, because I know the truth now as opposed to what I sort of understood at the time, but allow myself to recreate my perception at that time, because that was the truth for me at that moment, was what I perceived to be reality, and it since has shifted. But you have to recreate that perception as best you can.
Sometimes it's not pretty.
No, and you have to let it be dark.
You
know, and in fact, I was just talking to a woman, I teach memoir, and this woman was saying she wanted to write some memoir stuff, but she was afraid of what she would say and all that would come out. And I was letting her know, I said, you've got to go into the darkness to see the light. You have to be willing to go into it. The story won't work. And I'm sure you're really going into that now.
Yes, but it's also true, I mean, in fiction, too. You know, there's the story that's on the surface, and then, you know, after that first draft, then you sort of need to look underneath and see, well, you know, why is everybody being so screwed up here? And and go back in a little deeper than that. So it's you know, I've always said, you know, novels are such a big thing. I mean, novels are, you know, once you even have got in your head, it's like 2 years of work without pretty much doing other things. I mean, just pretty steady work on the novel. And, you know, it's always nice to have different things to, like, an assignment is great because then I get to put the novel down for at least a couple of weeks. But all writing to me, you know, it all comes from the same place, you know, that,
yeah.
And I always said I write everything but poetry, and then, voila, I wrote a poem last week.
I know.
Came out of nowhere. Yeah, so that was really interesting. It's going to be in Harper Palette this fall, and I was just, I wrote one poem, I've submitted one poem in my life, they accepted it, and now I don't ever have to do it again. And it's the same with drama. I'm on the board of our local writer center, the Gloucester Writer Center, and they were offering a 10-minute play workshop last fall. I didn't even know what a 10-minute play was, but I thought I just sort of needed a break after, you know, Float was about to come out soon, and I wasn't in a position to start another long project. And I thought, well, let's see what this drama thing's about. And so I wrote this 10-minute play, and then a friend afterwards said, well, you've written this play, submit it to this festival, and then, you know, within a couple months, it gets produced at the Boston Playwrights Theater in Boston. So that was like another one. I'm going, great. I'm just like checking that off, going, okay, wrote my play, although I believe I will write drama again. Not sure about the poetry, but I'm pretty sure I will write drama again, a full-length thing at some point.
That's great. Oh, you're a brave woman. So listen, there's a lot of people out there, and I meet them and off in my rounds, who are women and men who have in their middle years, you know, have had a family and worked a job, but have been sitting on this writing thing for a long time and are trying to get up the gumption to do it. So what would you say to some of those people, although you didn't sit on this writing thing, but you came to it later than a lot of writers. So what would you say to them about doing it now at this time in their life?
Well, I'd say you've got a lot going for you because you have lived a life, you know, all these, you know, young people coming out of writing programs, and they've only ever been in school and writing programs. They don't really have, you know, great material to start writing about. They don't really have the darkness that comes with living a longer life and finding out that there's, you know, there's a lot of sadness in life, no matter how wonderful one's life is. There's a lot of sadness, and people starting later, they've already got that, and then so that's a benefit, and that your kids are gone. I mean, it's just, you know, you just have to just do it, and I would suggest taking courses to give you some, you know, some inspiration and guidelines, and plus you don't have time forever to just like mess around, you know, just might as well cut to the chase, take a course, find out what it's all about. And take a few courses, get really involved in a writing community, have other people around you who are, you know, roughly the same age and the same aspirations, and just help each other. I've been in a writing group in Cambridge since I started writing. That professor got me into a vetted writing group in Cambridge, and we have been each other's rock through all these many years.
That's great.
Publication. So really, have people read your work, you know, and read each other's work, and just as I said before, you gotta love the process. Publishing's hard, and send out to the literary magazines. Don't be afraid. It's just rejection, you know. Just develop a rhino skin and send that stuff out, because you'll learn that way too. So that's my advice.
That is excellent advice, Joanne. This has been one fast 30 minutes. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Yes.
And good.
I hope to meet you. I'll be at AWP, Associated Writer Programs in Seattle, coming to your hometown in March.
That's
I've never been neck of the woods, but that's where my publisher is from. So
I hope to be knocking around that. So, I will look for you. It's Float. Yes, available everywhere. Fine books are sold, I'm sure.
Yep, environmental literature, environmental fiction, up-and-coming genre.
Excellent. All right, Joanne, good luck, and I'll see you around, I hope.
All right, thank you.
Oh, we lost her. Oh, too bad. I'm sorry. Goodbye, Joanne. Well, everybody, thanks for stopping by. What a great conversation. The book is Float. Check it out. I'll be here next Tuesday again, I hope, with Jasper Ford. It's not certain, but the fabulous science fiction dystopian writer Jasper Ford. Until then, get around some writers, talk about writing, write what you love, do what you love, love who you love, because all you need is me. I think you'll be good to go.